are listening to Romeo, the wolf who came to Juno. Though he was killed by poachers, he still lives in the hearts of many in Juno, much loved by those who watched him play with dogs and wander on the outskirts of town. Well, he returns in a big way next month with a number of events to honor his memory. Todd Hunt, a Juno composer, is organizing some of those events as part of the Orpheus Project, which includes music composed just for Romeo. So this is a tremendously multifaceted project. Can you tell us what all the moving pieces of this are?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. So it is confusing. So hang on, everybody. We've got lots of different things. So actually, let me start by saying that I find the whole story of Romeo the Wolf just fascinating because, you know, he was a wild creature. We don't know exactly what he was thinking. We don't have a lot of the facts. All we have are what people saw. So instead of doing the normal thing like I might have done, I wanted to hear from lots of different artists and lots of different ways of making art, not just music, but poetry and visual arts and dance and everything. So that is part of why this is such a big sprawling thing. So on the maybe more non-musical side, we've got a photo exhibit starting first Friday at the Jack in February. We've got a couple of folks curating this exhibit from photographers who sent in their things. And we're picking 20 of the best images, which we will then print and put up for people to see. And we'll also auction them off. So there's that, which is a kind of a big deal. There's a fireside chat that Nick Chans is going to do at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, February 11th at 7 p.m. The Juno Nordic Ski Club is doing a Romeo race February 12th, I believe that is, at 10 a.m. Boy, what else? Oh, right. There's a whole other thing on the music side. Joel Bennett and Elena Levy have gotten together and written a piece about 20 minutes long for five instrumentalists and narrator that we are hoping to get into the schools actually and perform. It's designed to go into classrooms and sort of teach people about Romeo and give some kind of very thoughtful ideas about who Romeo was. The text is by Joel Bennett, who knew Romeo very well. Then our biggest program, which is called Wolf Songs, will have two big pieces on it, cantatas, really. One by Emerson Eads and Dave Hunsacker called Black Wolf for chamber orchestra, narrator, and chamber choir. The chamber choir being Vox Borealis, led by Sarah Radke Brown. And my piece on that program, which I wrote, is A Wolf Called Romeo, text by Nick Jans, who wrote the book of the same name. So that is February 18 through 20 at Thunder Mountain High School. My piece is 17 instrumentalists, two singers, a soprano and a baritone, and dancers, professional dancers, as well as some local dancers, all choreographed by Genevieve Carson, who is a Juno girl, grown up here, but living in LA right now, working as a dance professional.
Wow. So how do you go about writing a musical piece for a wolf?
I thought kind of interesting. I had been talking with Nick Jans for a little while, and once we kind of settled on some excerpts from his book, and actually, I should say, this is at the beginning of COVID, and so I had nothing to do. I was like pretty much totally unemployed, so I became a full-time composer, which was wonderful because I was able to go to my studio and just sit at the piano and play things and come up with ideas. The great idea I came up with was listening to videos of Romeo howling. And I took the pitches, or, you know, very approximate pitches that Romeo would howl, and turned it into a musical motive, a sound, I guess, and built the whole, this hour-long piece, more or less off of four notes that I got from his howl.
Huh, that is very curious.
Yeah.
So Nick Jan seems to be sort of at the center of this, his book about Romeo, A Wolf Called Romeo.
Well, I read the book for the first time in 2015, thereabouts, very shortly after it came out, and immediately thought, I need to make this into an opera. And the opera idea could never really figure out how one would do that with a wild wolf. We don't know any facts about him other than what people saw and wrote down or talked about. So we don't really have a story. We just have a whole bunch of really vignettes and lots of different viewpoints. And so I eventually, it took frankly a few years to figure out that we needed to get lots of different artists on board so that we would have different takes on what Romeo meant to them and what Romeo meant to Juno. And on a greater thing, it's like, what is our place as humans living next to this wild world? Like, when they kind of come together, sometimes it can be okay, sometimes it's bad, but in this case it was for the most part magical. It needs to be dealt with, I guess, is not a good way to put it, but explored.
So the book is called A Wolf Called Romeo, and mm-hmm. I guess the piece that you composed has the same title,
right,
with seven movements.
Right.
It's an epic, I guess.
Yeah. So the soprano and the baritone that I had mentioned sing Nick's text. The baritone is sort of like Nick. I try not to put a personality onto, or a character, I should say, onto what they're singing. But the baritone is basically Nick. He's a narrator, sort of describes what has happened. The soprano, however, is a person from Romeo's time experiencing these things in the moment and sort of telling us about it as they're happening. And it's only at the end, at the memorial service, where they kind of meet up at the same time.
So you have seven movements that you've composed. How long is that?
So it's just over 60 minutes.
Wow.
I was shooting for 45 minutes, actually. And there's so much great text that Nick gave me to use that I could only throw away so much. And there's lots of feelings that go along with that. And I had mentioned that the dance is, I think, a very important part of this piece. Each movement has its own dance episode as well. So you could almost think it's like 14 movements, kind of. You'll have the vocal section, and then the dancers come out and sort of explore what just happened or what is about to happen. So it's sort of big form stuff. I think it'll keep people's attention.
It's just hard to grasp as you describe it, but we have an excerpt from this opus, so to speak. So yeah. Tell us what we should expect to hear.
Okay, so this excerpt is from the sixth movement. So we're getting pretty close to the end now. Well, anybody who's read the book, I'm sure, remembers the story where Nick is sitting on the side of Mendenhall Lake when it's frozen, but it's maybe very early spring. It started to thaw, so there's a sheet of water over the ice, so it looks like a lake. It doesn't look like a frozen lake. And Romeo's on the other side and sort of looking around, and it stands up and just starts walking across the water. And this magical moment that was very effective to him, it really affected me as well. So that's what the movement is about. And the music we're about to hear is sort of taking off right after that happened. So to me, it's sort of what feeling we have after seeing that.
All right, let's listen to a bit.
Thank you.
So this part of the music was what was inspired by Nick Jans's description of Romeo crossing the lake. There's spring meltwater over it, and even though it's frozen, it looks like Romeo is walking on water. This next part, though, is darker. It's the foreshadowing of Romeo's death when he's shot and killed.
It kind of gets into the precarious situation that Romeo found himself in his last moments. Although I don't really write it per se, but yeah, sort of let the dancers do their talking about that in a very abstract way, of course.
That music really does drive home the tragic loss of Romeo. And, you know, it's kind of like a wake for a wolf. But, you know, some may ask, is Romeo really worth all this much trouble to memorialize him in song, dance, performances?
Any wolf, probably no. But the idea of what Romeo represents, I think, is worth all of the trouble. It's not necessarily that we are saying Romeo is the greatest wolf that ever lived. I mean, maybe, but to me, that's not the point. The point is more our connection as humans with the wild world that is right on our doorstep, and how magic can happen there, and our connection with that magic is to me what it's all about, because something extraordinary happened. It could have been a wolf, it could have been a bear, a porcupine. The point is, it's about really what happened rather than who the protagonists were.
This is really hard to picture what this is going to be like, but this is like a 7-movement piece of music. There will be dancing to accompany it. There will be singing and some narration through this.
Yeah. So in my piece, there isn't any narration, but I don't think I even explained the structure of the whole concert. So the first half is Emerson Eads and Dave Hunsaker's Black Wolf that has narration and a choir along with the chamber orchestra. And then intermission, second half is with my piece, you know, the singers and the dancers, as well as an orchestra.
So we have what you have called a rough cut of Emerson Eads' composition, The Black Wolf. And it's not anything like what the final product is going to be like, but was created to kind of give us a feel for what we are going to experience. So can you tell us a little bit about this piece that we're going to play next?
Yeah, so like I said, yes, it is a rough cut. That is my voice. And I promise I will not be doing the narration at the performance. We will have somebody, better doing that. But the orchestral sound you hear is a computer rendition. So there are no humans doing that. So I had to take the text and then just record it and, in my computer, sort of place it in the right place in the music. That's the way we do things.
Ultimately, will there be an orchestra that will play these?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, the Black Wolf piece has 12 instrumentalists, along with the chamber choir and narrator. And my piece is 17 instrumentalists with two singers and dancers.
Okay, so eventually what we're going to listen to is a live performance with a live narrator, and we're going to be asked to use our mind's eye to remember Romeo, which I think is kind of the best part about this. So let's give it a listen.
In the middle of the lake, the skier freezes. She has seen something emerging on the western bay. She's not sure what. Somehow, I can tell that she's frightened by it. The dogs see it too. They freeze. Their tails curl between their legs. Now he comes into my sight. Black, jet black, on the white snow, like a vision, like a dream, like a ghost. Something ancient about him, primordial, otherworldly, or something profoundly of this world, but not the human world. He stands majestically still. Somehow he draws the dogs to him. They cower, they seem to shake, but they go to the phantom, powerless. The skier stands frozen, watching. I imagine she is frightened, thinking she is about to see her dogs torn to pieces by this thing from the wilderness. The dogs are close to the wild wolf now. I can see he is twice as big as the shepherd. He touches his nose to theirs, tail straight out, a canine greeting.
It is hard for people to get their arms around it, but maybe you could help us by explaining to us what we're supposed to take away from honoring Romeo in so many different ways.
Yeah, like I said, it's finding or celebrating that connection that we can have with the wild world that's out there, seeing that there are things bigger than ourselves. Artists are always looking for inspiration, and I find that inspirational, and the whole story of Romeo inspirational, and passing on that inspiration to an audience is the greatest thing I think we can do.
Did you have a personal connection with Romeo?
You know, I didn't. I was living out of the country, actually, for most of the time that Romeo was around. I heard about him and was completely fascinated, and remember very strongly when he was found dead. It really affected me, even though I never actually saw him.
Well, I guess you read Nick Jans's book, so I guess it gives you a tie to him, and maybe that's just the purpose of it, right?
And actually that's a great point, because not everybody has read the book, or maybe they read the book and didn't connect with them, and maybe they need music and poetry and dance to make that connection. I think exploring things that happen to us in the arts is an excellent way of just processing.
Did you take a lot of joy in trying to put notes to your thoughts about Romeo?
Oh, I did. Yeah. I think like so many people in COVID times, we sort of reassess what's our life about? What are we doing? And while I love what I'm doing, I've kind of discovered that writing music for me is something I need to do more of. I had sort of gotten into it back in undergrad, but it fell away, as things do, especially things that are hard. But no, I've been really trying to do more and more of that over the last, couple of years now. So that's exciting.
Well, that is exciting to see all these people involved in this. So I guess the idea is that this thing is so huge, we're going to dole it out over time and I guess build in a crescendo to February when all of this stuff finally rolls out. So I'm sure that you and some of the others involved in this Remembering Romeo project will be back to tell us more.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Todd Hunt, a composer and one of the main organizers behind the Orpheus Project, a month-long celebration of the life and times of Romeo, the wolf who came to Juno.
The wild and the domestic. The wild and the domestic. The Dream of Eden. I find something about it has made me cry.